Peter B. Collins News and Comment here on Friday, the 13th of July. It's the dog days of summer. Frankly, not a lot of hot breaking news. And because most people aren't paying attention, Mitt Romney is going to be giving a series of interviews to try to explain and put a lid on all the questions about when he actually left his post as the CEO of Bain Capital. And he is hemmed in by conflicting accounts that come from the Mitster. For example, when he decided to run for governor of Massachusetts, there were questions raised about his residency in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the so-called Bay State. And so he said, well, I continue to work for Bain Capital after I left to run the Olympics in Salt Lake City in 1999. But now he wants us to believe that that was just an opportunist explanation so he could qualify to run for governor of Massachusetts. And now he's really cornered because the Securities and Exchange Commission filings that show that he continued to run Bain Capital and even form new enterprises, new partnerships after 1999 into 2000, 2001, even 2002. Well, you can only stretch the truth so far. And it appears that Romney wants to go on television with carefully rehearsed talking points and try to focus on what he says are the intentional misstatements or lies coming from the Obama campaign. And he wants to narrowly reject the notion that he was still running Bain Capital when it engaged in a number of deals that led to major offshore outsourcing. He knows he's vulnerable to that line of attack. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what kind of talking points, what kind of spin Mitt Romney will deliver here in the middle of summer on a Friday night when no one is expected to be watching. And my prediction is that in the coming weeks he'll say, well, I answered that on Friday the 13th, and I want to talk about jobs. I want to talk about tax cuts for the rich. He's going to try desperately to change the subject. So that's kind of the big story today. Also, more coverage of the Jerry Sandusky, Joe Paterno case out of Penn State. We talked about that yesterday, and so I won't really go any further on that. In our in-depth interview today, we introduce you to Steven Iverson. He is a largely unknown singer-songwriter who generally performs in church. And it was a minister friend of mine who referred me to Steven Iverson, Beverly Brewster, who is a minister and also an attorney who has represented the Reverend Janie Spar, whose case we have covered here in some depth. Janie Spar was rebuked by one level of the Presbyterian Church for marrying same-sex couples, and as we covered more recently, a group of church elders called a presbytery refused to embrace that rebuke, setting up an interesting challenge for the hierarchy of the Presbyterian Church USA. That said, Bev Brewster, who is a preacher, invited Steven Iverson to perform his song "That's Not What Jesus Taught" after the recent Supreme Court ruling about the Affordable Health Care Act. And you can hear his music and our conversation online today at peterbcollins.com. And for those of us who are having a hard time choosing between Obama and Romney, I'm grateful to the New York Times for a pretty lengthy profile today of Dr. Jill Stein. She's been a guest on our program, and if you'd like to hear that interview, go to peterbcollins.com and put Jill Stein in the search window, and our interview from December, or maybe it was January of this year, will pop up for you. I'm very impressed with her, and she holds the positions that I value on most important issues, and she is not the full nominee of the Green Party yet. because Roseanne Barr is still in the mix. But most people expect that she will prevail and be on the ballot in most states and also qualify for federal matching funds, which the Obama and Romney campaigns will not be using this year because they can raise far more from outside of the public finance system. So I want to encourage you to check out the article on Jill Stein in Friday's New York Times. Also today, the state of Arizona has imposed the most restrictive time limit on a woman's right to choose an abortion. And the new restriction is a prohibition on abortions after 20 weeks have passed since a woman's last missed period. And that's about 18 weeks after fertilization. And this is just another way of nipping away at Roe versus Wade, which established 24 weeks as the standard. And one can call that arbitrary. I really can't say that I have mastery of the science to tell you when a fetus becomes a viable human being. But 24 weeks has been the national standard since Roe versus Wade, and now they're trying to shave that by just a month and see if that will pass muster with the right-wing Supreme Court, assuming that this case will get there, and I think that is a pretty safe bet. And as we discussed yesterday, there are now five states at least that have only one abortion clinic in the entire state, and all kinds of tricky legislation is being used by Republican legislatures and governors to essentially ban abortion without quite conflicting directly with the privacy rights established under Roe versus Wade. The other day, we reported and linked to a powerful investigative story at truthout.org, written by my friend Jason Leopold and Dr. Jeffrey Kay, the psychologist who works as a journalist at night. And they did a great job regarding an Inspector General report from the Department of Defense regarding the allegations that at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, prisoners were forced to be drugged. And we've talked about mefloquine, which is an anti-malarial drug with incredible psychoactive side effects, and it has been widely administered, we believe, to every inmate held at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And as Kay and Leopold point out, the coverage by the Inspector General is spun up pretty heavily because he says, well, there's no evidence that they used mind-altering drugs to interrogate prisoners, but the Inspector General acknowledged that some detainees were interrogated after they had been given drugs. If you really want to find the truth, including the way they tricked Jose Padilla into believing that they had injected him with a truth serum, go to truthout.org and read the article for yourself. The Associated Press, true to form, picked up the story without any credit to Truthout or Leopold and Kay. And that happens way too often. We have another report of a massacre in Syria, as many as 200 people killed on Thursday in a Sunni village. And this against the backdrop that the UN Security Council is trying to come up with some way of stemming this violence. And Kofi Annan has declared his efforts a failure. And so we've really hit a wall here. There have been two reported defections of a general and a diplomat, the ambassador to Iraq, from the Assad government in the past week. But as you know, I am highly suspicious of what's really going on in Syria, and I don't believe that it is as simple as a brutal dictator and the courageous opposition. There are thugs running amok there who commit these kinds of atrocities, and what we don't know is if they are thugs who are working for Bashar Assad or thugs who are on the payroll of, say, the CIA, Mossad, or under the control of the Turkish government. And these are things that we may learn about after the fact, but I continue to encourage you to use skepticism when you view articles about the war, the civil war in Syria. we have ratcheted up once again the sanctions against Iran. And I really think this is becoming a knee-jerk situation where, in order to curry favor with Israel, and in order to try to prevent Israel, plead, persuade, beg them not to launch a unilateral strike on Iran, we continue to try to make life more painful, particularly for certain political leaders in Iran. And what I find troubling is that it's all based on the premise of a false premise, and that is that we cannot permit Iran to have a nuclear weapon. Now, I realize it's not ideal, it's not a good thing for any expansion of the infamous nuclear club in this world. But to really base this as a simple and provocative premise permits all kinds of bad policy to be developed. And it's not that I think that the Supreme Ayatollah is a good guy. It's not that I like Ahmadinejad. No. It's a fundamental issue that Iran has signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They are entitled to enrich uranium for nuclear power and medical purposes. And we don't have any actual proof that they are doing more than that. We have suspicions, mostly driven by Israel. And when you really look at the intelligence reports and the national intelligence estimates from our own government, this is all based on hysteria. So we're doing it further. And this interesting article in Friday's New York Times doesn't question the premise for these sanctions against Iran. They mainly get a couple of different views from the right and the far right on whether these will be effective or not. Here in the San Francisco Bay Area, we've got a newspaper called The Chronicle. It's owned by the Hearst Corporation that owns Cosmopolitan and many other media outlets, including a whole bunch of television stations. And it has been increasingly leaning toward the right. They brought in a new publisher and editor from Arizona about 2 years ago, and I've really noticed the difference. And there are two items in Friday's Chronicle that drew my attention. One is a front-page story announcing that former Congresswoman Ellen Tauscher, who is a Blue Dog Democrat, who stepped down to become a State Department official about a year and a half ago, she has endorsed the opponent of longtime Congressman Pete Stark. And Pete is harder and harder to support because he's in his 80s and he's been a little erratic recently. And the Chronicle caught him in a couple of statements that are moderately outrageous and certainly not true that he made in an editorial board meeting earlier this year. But they continue to pound away at Pete Stark. And Pete is an anti-war liberal. He is the only acknowledged atheist in the House of Representatives, and they're gunning for him. So in today's story, Tauscher endorses his opponent, who used to be an intern in her congressional office. This is a guy who has no national political experience. He's a local city councilman. He's 31 years old. And it may be Pete's time to go. But the way the Chronicle is gunning for him is extremely unfair and heavy-handed. And I hope that cooler heads will prevail. He's been redistricted into areas with more conservative people. And the flashpoint for Tauscher's endorsement of the opponent is that she says that Pete Stark is hostile to the mission of the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. And this is part of the Department of Energy's nuclear program, and it's run by the University of California. And I share Pete Stark's view of the role of these laboratories in our nuclear arsenal and the way that a university, in my view, a public university, should not be involved with and profiting from the military sector, and in particular, nuclear weapons. So, Pete, I'm with you on this one, and I'm sorry to see the way the Chronicle is abusing its position in order to try to railroad you out of office. And Pete Stark's not the only liberal thereafter. The other, we've been reporting on the case of our sheriff, Ross Mercurimi. A quick recap, he was serving as a city supervisor. He won election as sheriff and resigned as supervisor. And before he was sworn in as sheriff, he got into an altercation, an argument with his wife. That happened on New Year's Eve at the end of 2011. And he pled guilty to a single charge of false imprisonment, which is a misdemeanor. And immediately after, the mayor, Ed Lee, demanded that Ross Mercurimi resign. He refused. And so he suspended the sheriff without pay, and a process is underway before the City Ethics Commission to terminate Sheriff Ross Mercurimi based on his alleged unsuitability for office because of a misdemeanor spat with his wife. And I really think that this has become a railroading effort to get Mercurimi out of office. As I have said before, he didn't handle this terribly well, and in some cases he made things worse. And they're able to flatly say, and it's true, that Mercurimi and his wife did not cooperate with law enforcement. But she didn't want the charges brought against her husband to begin with. It was a third party, a neighbor, who reported this to the police. And so, as we reported earlier this week, Mayor Ed Lee, who violated his own pledge not to seek a full term as mayor when he was installed as an interim mayor, he took the stand at this ethics commission under oath, and there are two statements that he has made that appear to be false. Yes, perjury by the mayor in trying to get the sheriff fired. And today's Chronicle takes the side of the mayor and basically says that, you know, whether the mayor lied or not, that Mercurimi should, you know, he's unfit to serve and he should be removed. Well, I don't agree with the Chronicle here, and I believe that Mercurimi has rights that are being violated through this process, and that if the mayor lied in his effort to get the sheriff fired, it does undermine the credibility of the entire proceeding. And so here is a quote from the final lines of today's Chronicle editorial, which, by the way, is printed right above a single letter to the editor who basically says, throw the jerk out. Quote, these proceedings are about Mercurimi's actions and their reflection on his fitness to serve in a top law enforcement leadership position. This case is about removing a sheriff who has disgraced his office and refused to resign. Well, I'm sorry. San Francisco has had tainted sheriffs in the past. We've had we had two mayors in a row, Willie Brown and Gavin Newsom, who had sexual affairs. Mayor Brown fathered a child with a woman, not his wife, while he was in office. And those did not get played out as reasons why they were unfit to serve in office. And I would argue that Mercurimi has not committed an offense any greater than other people have in the past who continued to serve here in crazy old San Francisco. And finally today, the girly man, the governator, is back where he belongs, making bad movies.
Who can take California? Set it on its ear. Stop it in its tracks and take it out of gear. The girly man.
The girly man.
The girly man can.
Yes, the girly man, former governor, who fathered a child with his housekeeper. And the child was born a week after a baby that he had with his wife, Maria Shriver.
Put it all askew.
Well, as I said, he's back where he belongs, making really bad action movies. And he's not even the lead star in a movie called Expendables 2. It's more than a cameo, but not quite a lead, according to one story about it. And they showed a trailer at Comic-Con, the comic book convention. And the cast includes Bruce Willis, Jet Li, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Liam Hemsworth, Chuck Norris, and Sylvester Stallone. Gosh, that's six different reasons why I will not go see this movie. But after holding California hostage for 5 years and blowing up his own private life, Schwarzenegger is back with action movies, stogies, and probably some scantily clad women. You can go see it. It opens August 17th at your own risk. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. I've got some great guests lined up for our in-depth interviews in the coming weeks, so keep coming back to peterbcollins.com.
To you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until